Ever wonder why pulling an all-nighter feels like a badge of honor? Thomas Edison claimed he needed just 4 hours of sleep, spending marathon sessions in his lab while the world slumbered. Charles Lindbergh became a national hero, not just for crossing the Atlantic, but for staying awake for 33 straight hours while doing it. Fast forward to today, and you'll find executives like Donald Trump dismissing anyone who sleeps more than necessary as a loser. This isn't just tough talk. It's the culmination of over a century of American culture that transformed sleep from a biological necessity into a character flaw. We've built an entire society on the premise that rest is for the weak, creating millions of chronically exhausted workers while their bosses dream of endless productivity. How did we get here? America's celebrated inventors transformed sleep deprivation into a badge of honor. Edison's four-hour nights became the success template, equating rest with weakness. When Lindbergh landed in Paris, newspapers celebrated his battle against drowsiness as much as his aviation feat, though he later admitted to hallucinations and desperate exhaustion. Self-help gurus promised men increased efficiency through sleep reduction. Women received the opposite message. They needed beauty sleep to maintain appearance. The double standard was stark. Men proved worth by conquering physical needs. Women were judged on looking pretty. After World War II, corporate America briefly embraced the well-rounded man who was rested. But as economic competition intensified, especially from Japan's overwork culture, sleep deprivation roared back. The Second Gilded Age brought executives who made sleeplessness central to their brand. Walmart's Sam Walton started at 4 a.m. and surprised employees with 2:30 a.m. donut deliveries. Even women executives like Oprah and Martha Stewart adopted this masculine standard, boasting of 4 to 5 hours nightly, the price of admission to leadership. While influential men celebrated sleeplessness, American policy largely ignored the problem. Government interventions targeted workers whose fatigue threatened public safety, but for most Americans, whose exhaustion endangered only themselves, policy relied on premium pay rather than hard limits, creating a perverse incentive that rewarded overwork. The 1916 Adamson Act gave railroad workers an 8-hour basic day with time and a half beyond that, but no maximum. The Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 followed suit, implementing only a 50% pay premium for work beyond 40 hours weekly. The message was clear: you can work yourself to death as long as you're paid extra for the privilege. World War II accelerated the problem. Women flooded into defense jobs, and states suspended laws barring women's night work. By 1969, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission ruled that gender-specific protections violated Title VII. Women had won the dubious equality to work around the clock without any corresponding equality in household responsibilities. By the 1970s, 1/6 of the workforce worked non-standard shifts as consumer society demanded 24-hour access. Despite recognition that sleep disturbance was the leading problem of shift work, OSHA took no regulatory action. This minimalist approach reflected America's broader philosophy: intervene forcefully only when widespread fear threatens society, not when workers quietly destroy their health one sleepless night at a time. Steel workers at the turn of the 20th century endured 12-hour days, 7 days a week, 84 hours total. The worst was the long turn, a 24-hour double shift every other weekend when rotating from day to night. As novelist Thomas Bell described those final 12 hours, exhaustion slowly numbed his body, mercifully fogged his mind. He ceased to be a human being. Andrew Carnegie's 1892 defeat of the Steelworkers Union at Homestead eliminated any countervailing force. Steel executives dismissed sleep deprivation entirely. Chairman Elbert Gerry could not comprehend why any other man should be unwilling to work as long and as hard as he had. Night shift workers managed only 3 to 5 hours of sleep daily. Low pay forced many to share beds, sometimes 4 men rotating use of one bed. Many relied on whiskey to sleep through daytime noise. The toll manifested in workplace deaths, teenagers dozing off and crushed by equipment. The 1919 steel strike drew half the industry's 500,000 workers, with abolishing the long turn as a prominent demand. Though it failed, public pressure mounted. In 1923, industry leaders finally agreed to end the 12-hour day. When railway sleeping car porter G.H. Sylvester testified before the U.S. Commission on Industrial Relations in 1915, his answer about rest opportunities was blunt. You ain't supposed to get any sleep. Porters ensured comfortable sleep for passengers while being systematically denied it themselves. Before unionization, porters worked approximately 400 hours monthly with no limits. On long runs like Chicago to Oakland, they might work 48 to 60 hours without rest, sometimes fainting from exhausting. Management practiced doubling back, ordering porters to immediately take another trip after completing their run. A 1920 study found only 23% sleeping more than 3 hours daily. In 1925, dissident porters formed the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, selecting A. Philip Randolph as leader. The union elevated sleep deprivation as a central issue, targeting the smoking room couch where porters slept in contaminated environments separated from passengers only by curtains. These hazardous spaces sent porters flying into peril during derailments. Despite racism hindering progress, the BSCP secured a 1953 contract ending the smoking room sofa practice, exposing the paradoxical indignity of ensuring sleep for others while being denied it themselves. Long-haul truckers have battled chronic sleep deprivation since the 1920s, fostering a hyper-masculine culture where 12-hour days seemed weak. The Great Depression forced desperate one-man operations. Independent trucker Bert Glupker once completed a four-night round trip without sleep, splashing cold water on his face to stay awake. ICC Commissioner Joseph Eastman's 1930s investigation revealed alarming patterns. A third of truckers worked over 60 hours weekly, a quarter drove 16-hour shifts, and some made 60-hour nonstop runs. One Michigan operator slept just 14 hours across 5 days. Consequences included hallucinations and numerous collisions. Despite clear evidence linking long hours to accidents, the ICC's 1937 Hours of Service regulations explicitly distinguished between mere drowsiness and severe fatigue, effectively normalizing drowsy driving. The regulations weakly limited consecutive driving to 10 hours with 8 hours rest. A promised comprehensive study never materialized. The 1941 U.S. Public Health Service report confirmed longer driving slowed reactions but avoided specific recommendations. Weak regulations remained intact for over 60 years. 2003 revisions even increased daily driving time to 11 hours. We've normalized sleep deprivation to survive a 24/7 world. About 20% of U.S. workers face shifts disrupting biological rhythms, yet only a quarter control their schedules, creating a sleep divide with drowsy workers concentrated in low-wage sectors. America has reduced average sleep by 20% over the past century, with 30% of workers sleeping 6 hours or less daily. We've increased annual working time by 160 hours, while other affluent nations reduced theirs, an unaddressed public health crisis. Some progress emerges. Companies offer napping rooms, unions negotiate rest breaks. The U.S. could join over 90 nations requiring at least 1 day off weekly. OSHA could classify sleep-denying schedules as workplace hazards. Adequate sleep isn't luxury, it's biological necessity and human right. In a culture celebrating hustle and demonizing rest, choosing sleep becomes resistance. Your exhaustion isn't personal failing, it's a system extracting every waking hour. The most radical act might be closing your eyes and refusing to apologize.